Ladies, gentlemen, gentle dogs, it is Panning the Stream time. I'm sitting across the table from Dan Reichert. Say hi, Dan.
That's me. Hi.
And today we will be discussing the Netflix documentary, Fire, The Greatest Party That Never Happened.
It's worth noting there are two competing documentaries. Hulu made a big stink about it by swooping in there and trying to get in before Netflix.
The dueling docs.
Yes, I've heard that one's fine too. The big difference is they have an interview with Billy McFarland, the big shithead behind this whole thing. Mm. But yeah, we watched the Netflix one, and we just got done and walked in here.
Yeah, it was I was surprised at how good the documentary was. I mean, I know obviously. Going into it, you know that Fyre Festival was a total clusterfuck, but to hear the background in it and how it came together and why it was such a fucking huge disaster. And not only that, but the history of this guy, Billy McFarland, who was essentially, I mean, like, you know, a lot of these people that talk in the documentary were higher ups in the company that was preparing it, this company, Fyre Media. And there was a separate team that was organizing the festival. So the Fyre Media people, the software people, the ones developing the app, were, you know, not really participating at all in the festival preparation. So Fyre Festival, we should probably say, was, I guess, planned to promote this Fyre app. And what the Fyre app was essentially they wanted it to be like an Uber for booking talent. So you could go on this app and book Iggy Azalea, they kept using her image for like however many thousand dollars for your party or whatever show or something. And then in an effort to promote that, they wanted to put together this festival. The issue was they didn't have any event planners. They wanted to offer this luxury experience without any of like the capital or like planning skills necessary to execute, you know, something of that caliber in a like remote island in the Bahamas with no, you know, electricity, no transportation. It was just, what a fucking disaster. I mean, and you know, I know, I'm curious how you feel about this, but like was really moved by the people on the ground that like wasted so much time that were counting on this money and they got fucked out of the money. It's like the vendors and shit that I really feel bad for. Granted, there were the people around Billy that were also screwed over, but I feel like they could have all just stood up and be like, this is a disaster. But instead, they just kept assuming that he knew what was going on.
Well, yeah. The one thing that we see over and over throughout this documentary is that he does have a certain confidence and charisma about him that talks people into giving him money or making people think that this stuff is going to work. So saying like, oh, it's going to bring these jobs to the Bahamas. It's going to, you know, we're going to pay you guys. It's going to be great for the economy and everything. And you're right. Like, those were some of the more devastating interviews that I didn't realize that all of these local laborers had been working, you know, 24 hours a day, they said, you know, doing the catering, preparing the food, building, you know, the things and the set and all that stuff. And it sounds like they were never paid. And that's actually one of the hardest interviews was the one at the end with the woman who had to pay $50,000 of her own money just to make it right. And nobody came to make things right for her.
Yeah. Meanwhile, this guy is still, I mean, he's in prison now, but like up until very recently, he was kind of living large despite not having any money. And it's, you know, it's just, it's bonkers. And like, go ahead.
Well, I was, you're right. I was unaware too of the Fyre app thing, which I really think that on its face, that is not an inherently bad idea. Just like, hey, we've got this app that has an agreements with a bunch of different stars. You can book them for private parties or whatever. It seemed like it was more parties and stuff and not necessarily like booking for venues like traditional concerts, right? Mm-hmm. It was like, hey, if you
want... That's the impression that I got.
Yeah, if you want Ja Rule to show up at your rich guy party or whatever, and you can just do this here and set the date and everything, which that's honestly not a bad idea. So that does suck ass for all the people that worked for a year on this app that, you know, were not part of this whole thing. It seemed like it spun out of control pretty quick because at first it was like, hey, let's do this, to create the buzz or whatever. And they did the whole photo shoot thing.
The promo video. So, yeah, that's what they even say at the end. The whole festival essentially was this promo video because it sold this idea of, like, people, you know, you getting to hang out with these influencers and these super popular on the internet models and, like, you know, live the high life and be able to have all these Instagrammable moments or whatever. And obviously that wasn't going to happen. And, you know, it's funny, and I was telling you this while we were watching it. You know, we live in New York City, and you hear a lot about these, like, really brilliant young minds who – and some are actually truly smart. But a lot of these people who – these businessmen who find their way at the head of the company, like, they lie to get there. Fake it till you make it is, like, a thing that people actually believe. And to an extent, you know, whatever, it works. But you have to have the stuff to back it up. I mean,
yeah.
You can't just lie your way to the top.
Well, I think some people are able to do it, and some people have that ability that Billy McFarland had. And some people can get away with it for years or decades and actually become extremely successful and find themselves in positions of power and wealth and everything, and it never really bites them on the ass.
Right.
Then there are people like Billy McFarland, I think, that, you know, they got away with it for a while. I mean, he's still pretty young. He got arrested like all the time.
He's my age.
Yeah, he was like late 20s.
Yeah.
And then you got people that probably like come into New York, or doesn't have to be New York, but, you know, like.
No, it has to be New York.
That have these huge like startup ideas or whatever. I'm sure you see it a lot in like the app community in Silicon Valley and stuff where they just talk to a bunch of like angel investors.
Yeah, and these people that just have more money than they know what to do with, they think there's a good idea there. And sometimes maybe there is a good idea, but just the, like, Fyre Festival wasn't a bad idea, right? I mean, for if you have the ability to put that shit together and offer a luxury experience, you know, obviously it showed it was a good idea, the fact that it sold out tickets,
yeah.
You know?
Yeah, it was very sharp marketing. Like, all of a sudden, like, it was smart what they did with getting these influencers to do that, like, burnt orange tile with the video. Like, that was all sharply produced. I mean, they organized it all with the hashtag to all hit at once, so all of a sudden everyone's going to be seeing this on their Instagram feed and be like, what is this thing? It's super smart, but, like, I wonder what these attendees expected, like, because when they're filming the promo shoot thing, they're doing the thing where Billy's like, okay, so you dudes run into the water, run into the ocean, then all you models run after him. It's like, that's the dream we're selling. We're selling the dream to the average, like, middle America guy.
Right.
And it's like, is that what these people thought? Like, these rich kids that bought these tickets that, like, oh, I'm going to go to this thing. We're just going to get wasted and dance. And, like, all these, like, the hottest girls on Instagram are going to be, like, chasing me into the pool and the ocean. And,
I mean, I honestly think that is what a lot of these people thought. Because these Instagram influencers were tweeting that, implying that they were going to be there. So, I mean, I'm sure for a lot of these young people in their minds, these people with expendable income, they're like, well, if they're going to be there, of course it's going to be a good time.
That's an exclusive, like, thing on a private island.
That's like the Nintendo stamp of like
the
quality.
Thing.
Yeah, yeah. But Dan, I have to share this with you. So the promo video, the famous promo video, I don't know if they showed it in its entirety. I've seen bits and pieces of it on the internet. And I will say, what you remember from it is very attractive women, you know, hanging out on a yacht and jumping into water. What you don't remember is the music. And I have so this is via Amplify, which is a website that somehow got a hold of an email from Grant. Do you remember Grant,
yeah.
The marketing director? That
yeah,
was,
the
like,
really high-strung guy.
Super
yeah.
High-strung.
Yeah.
So he sent an email out, I guess, to the people that were going to do the music for this thing. And it's just the most, like, holy, like, just utter wankery. It's complete bullshit. I just want to read a little bit of it. Okay. So, as far as the musical direction for the brand piece is concerned, we really need to push the sonic boundary. The track should work at most points synergistically with the visual composition. However, at key moments, having the music and visual composition run in parallel to create moments of tension, this is in parentheses, to be sonically resolved, end of parentheses, would strengthen the overall work as a whole.
God.
Although some of the inspirations below are quite global, I think we need to develop a track with mass appeal. When global music elements are leveraged properly, the bits of unfamiliarity perhaps enhance listener attention. Cohesiveness of the overall work is so important. This is clearly just someone rambling that knows absolutely.
This is just some marketing asshole.
Yeah, but Dan, I'm not obviously not going to read this entire email, but it's 1,000 words.
Oh my!
It's several
God.
Pages long, and he's talking about like odd time signatures. He's talking about weird instruments and like classical infusions, overly luscious string elements. he doesn't want it to be too square. He wants it to be more circular. I mean,
what? I thought you meant square. Like, oh, you square. Like,
okay, so
he means
this,
musically square.
Luckily, the global music plugins for Logic are quite amusing. Ending on a chord or square endings, I think ending on some variants of a fourth chord can be interesting, or subtly picking third contrast with another compositional element as to not make things so square. This is a guy that took like one music theory class in school and is just like vomiting everything onto this paper for a song. I don't even think they had the song in this documentary.
Wasn't it? I think it was just some electronic thing.
It
or
was
something,
probably
right?
Just I don't know, just some synth or some generic like. You know, free use.
And had they, at this point with that video, had they announced any of the actual acts? Because, like, I know later they were like, okay, we got Major Lazer, we got mm-hmm. Blink-182, all this stuff. But, like, was it just kind of the general vibe of the, like, hey, you're going to be on a private island with all these famous people?
Yeah, I think at this juncture, this was before the promo video went out. I think the promo video was, like, the first thing. And then, you know, eventually they got the acts and stuff. But it's just... It's fraud. I mean, they say it in the documentary. It's – and, you know, I know people like this personally that just think like, oh, it'll work out in the end. You can lie for now. And then by the time, you know, we need to execute, it'll all be figured out. It's people that just don't worry about – they don't plan anything out. And it's just trying to figure out getting past everything as it comes rather than planning shit out. Well, and then you just end up in disaster for everyone and everything.
And they don't really tend to take responsibility like these types of people. Like they show the meeting at the end and it sounds like Ja Rule is saying like, hey, it's fine. We can salvage this. Like no one died. No one got hurt. It's like, no, you fucked over a lot
of
people.
Yeah, for a music festival,
thing.
No one dying. The expectation should be a little higher than that.
And honestly, like it was dangerous. Like those living conditions and the issues of the food and the water, the airport and everything, like it seemed bad. And like to like satiate the people or whatever, they're just running around throwing like tequila down their throats and everything. Right. Like that is that whole thing is a recipe for something worse than what happened.
Right,
and they're
right.
Kind of lucky, frankly, that it didn't get worse than it did.
It really makes you appreciate Woodstock in 69. My parents and I went to the Woodstock Museum a few months ago. And, you know, they weren't advertising this luxurious thing. Obviously, it was just advertised on like flyers and in ads and magazines and stuff. It wasn't, you know, all across the internet. But, you know, they didn't make these lofty promises. It was just a music festival and there was food shortages and there was bathroom shortages and it was filthy. There was a mudslide. The weather was horrible.
Right.
But obviously, it's this legendary event that everyone looks to, you know?
And it was but the marketing was like, hey, you want to get high and watch Hendrix?
Yeah.
It's like, oh, and yeah. And they got to do that.
Yeah. They should have like put this on domestically. And, you know, not offered these fucking villas and tents and shit.
Well, none of that shit happened. Like, they didn't even try to build that stuff. They had those sketches done or whatever for the, like, super expensive, like, nice-looking things. And then it seemed like everyone just got those fucking disaster tents or whatever. And then they promised all those influencers, like, the private villas, and they were trying to do the Airbnb thing. But, like, I don't even think any of the influencers or celebrities or bands even showed up, right? Because it was a nightmare from the first day when people came in.
From what I understand, it seems like... This Billy guy had a vision for what he wanted it to be. He put that vision out there as fact, as a promise. And then when it came time to organizing the stuff and putting things in place, it was just undoable with the lack of money that he had or whatever.
It was just misplaced confidence and hubris of just like, hey, I've got this vision, but with no idea of how to actually get the boots on the ground and do it right and spend the time needed and get the right team in place. Mm-hmm. Like it seemed like a lot of the people on his team seemed capable and everything.
Oh, yeah.
But they were, like that one guy said, like, I would need a year to set this up. And they gave me like 6 to 8 weeks or something.
Right,
so like, no matter how good a lot of these people on the team were, he was making it impossible for them.
Yeah. And like, well, a lot of the people that were being interviewed were not even necessarily people like on his team directly, but people like the marketing agency, like people that really have no control over what's they are just assigned to advertise the product or to, you know, in the case of that event planner, he's at the behest of Billy and his, you know, close coworkers or whatever. He can't like make any authoritative decisions.
Right.
So he's just at their mercy. So he has – it's like trying to put together a house out of like, you know, Necco wafers. It's just –
never thought I'd say this sentence, but I almost feel sorry for the influencers who, you know, they accepted this deal, they got the money and they posted this thing, and then they were getting sued.
Well,
but it sounds
like
some of them weren't doing the ad thing, right?
Yeah, it seemed like that was – I wonder, was this before it became like regulation for you to have to do the hashtag
they
ad?
They said in the documentary that things started – like the FCC or whatever or FTC started cracking down on that. I don't know if it was directly like the catalyst for that. But like let's say you're Kendall Jenner and someone says, hey, here's $250,000 to advertise our music festival. Mm-hmm. There's no way she could have – it's not like she's going to go in there and like inspect like the balance sheets and like the plans for the villas and all that. Like she should have done the ad thing.
Well, no, but I don't feel bad because I think there should be some degree of accountability because if they were upfront and honest, like I'm getting – just say I'm getting paid to share this or hashtag ad, whatever. Right. You know, in that case, it's like, well, she was getting paid for this. The way it seemed was like, oh, like that wasn't, that seemed to be the major selling point for people. They're going to this place where influencers are going to be.
Right.
But the influencers themselves were just getting paid to say that shit. And
right.
that was, from what I gather from the documentary, that was what catalyzed a lot of these, you know, ordinary people to get tickets because they want to be where these influencers were.
Right.
So I think they should be held accountable for that.
What I'm saying, though, is like I'm totally in agreement that like you do need to say like, hey, hashtag ad, mm-hmm. this is a paid for thing. Like, absolutely. That's how that should always work.
Mm-hmm.
I just don't think there's any way they would have been able to foresee the complete ineptitude of the team putting together the festival.
I mean, that goes for everyone that was a part of this festival that wasn't, you know, Billy and Ja Rule, right?
Right, right.
I mean, I feel like no one could have anticipated what a huge clusterfuck it would have been.
I'm surprised by the Ja Rule thing because, like, Billy, I think, is clearly the villain of this whole thing, like, without a doubt.
Mm-hmm.
But Ja Rule, like, you know, in all those early videos and everything, like, he's there on the boats directing all this stuff, telling people, like, you know, he had the vision, too, of all this. And so, but I guess he wasn't, I guess the difference is, in legal terms, and I know jack shit about legal uh-huh. stuff, but, like, Billy was the one, like, inflating the numbers and lying to investors.
Right.
And so I think that's what constituted, like, the fraud and everything.
Exactly. I think maybe to an extent Ja Rule was, you know, lured in by his lies as well. And, you know, I watch and consume a lot of, like, true crime stuff. And you hear a lot about, like, sociopaths and psychopaths. And it's very rare for someone to be a psychopath. And it's even rarer that a psychopath is violent. That's very rare. Most of the time, they just end up being ordinary people that don't harm anyone physically. But they're able to lie there. So I think Billy is like a nonviolent psychopath. I mean, like, he's – because most – there's obviously a lot of, you know, people are psychopaths out there. It constitutes a very small amount of the population, right?
Yeah.
But, you know, they have to make money somehow.
Well,
and they it's you know, the ability to read a person and know exactly what they want to hear, whether that means inflating numbers or constantly being optimistic and trying to act or trying to give off the impression that you have everything under control, that you know exactly, like, everything's going exactly as planned. Like, just to be able to do that, you know, that's not a normal ability that people have.
Oh, yeah, to just have zero empathy and to not care at all. Like, I bet, you know,
complete lack of empathy, exactly.
Yeah, I bet Billy is sitting in prison right now, and, like, I'm sure he thinks prison sucks.
Yeah.
But I doubt he's, you know, not sleeping at night because he's thinking about the laborers who didn't get paid.
He's probably
and stuff
just
like that.
Feeling bad for himself, if at
yeah,
all.
He probably thinks he was wronged in some way.
The very fact that after all this shit went down, he was then found selling fake
yes.
tickets to the Met Gala and all this stuff.
Yeah, like courtside things for
complete
the Grammys.
Like, he's just in his mind, he's like, well, what's the next thing I could do to fuck people out of their money? That's just textbook, like, no empathy sociopath.
When he just – I really like the phrase somebody used near the end. They called him an operational sociopath,
mm-hmm.
which I thought was great.
And that's exactly what I'm saying. Like,
yeah.
not like he isn't killing anyone.
Right.
But there are sociopaths in the world that still have to function in real life.
Right.
And that's what they do.
And some can use the things that make them a sociopath, and it actually kind of makes them a cunning,
completely.
Shitty business person.
You can get out of – you could say exactly the right thing to get out of punishment.
You can lie
without your way.
Worrying about it. Like, yeah.
Totally. Totally.
It's fascinating to me that, like, so we basically see three business plans for that Billy had here.
Mm-hmm.
At the beginning, we learn about Magnesis, which was this, like, exclusive New York City credit card that, like, if you're a member and you pay your dues, you get to, like, go to these exclusive parties and all this stuff.
Right.
And, like,
and it's essentially its thing was, like, it's a metal black card, which,
yeah.
you know, everyone has the association with the black card being like, oh, fuck, you have a black card. That's serious.
Yeah, yeah.
But this was apparently a more accessible thing for millennials that would allow you entry into, like, posh exclusive events, tickets to concerts.
Yeah, front row seats for Beyonce concerts, which all this stuff wound up being fake.
Mm-hmm.
Like, he never actually had this shit,
mm-hmm.
which, so we have that scam, we have the Fire Festival
mm-hmm.
scam, and then at the end, you have this NYC VIP thing.
Right.
And all of these things, well, first of all, they're all sold on a lie.
Mm-hmm.
Like, none of that shit, those tickets never existed. The Fire Festival never was what it was, you know, planned out to be or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
But also, it is all predicated on this idea of status
mm-hmm.
and the appearance of wealth and, you know, just being part of, like, the elite or whatever, and, like, you know, rubbing shoulders with celebrities and having access to these things and getting, you know, going to the Met Gala.
Right.
And it's fascinating too when, like, they reached out to Burning Man and the Met Gala and all these places and Taylor Swift and being like, no, none of these exist. Like, we don't do meet and greets
right.
or we're not selling tickets yet. No one should have tickets.
Right.
Like, they're all scams about appearing rich and important.
And it's one of those things that I don't think he would have any success if his schemes were around in the year 2000, anytime in the 90s, you know, before influencers became a thing, before Instagram came a thing. Because now people will go to places not to enjoy what is offered at that location or event or whatever, but to take a picture of themselves there and to give off the impression that they're living a certain kind of lifestyle. That is what people are after now. So they're willing to spend whatever amount of fee on this Magnesis card. They're willing to spend an inordinate amount of money on a ticket to a fake festival just for the idea of being able to, you know, hang out with influencers, to go to exclusive events, just because they want to have the picture, you know? We see it all the time. It's like there's that fucking ice cream museum that's just built for taking Instagram photos. There's a candy whatever festival or whatever.
Yeah, I saw that ad on the subway for like Candytopia or something here. And I was like, oh, I love candy. I would love to go to a place that's all about crazy candy and stuff. And then I realized it said like tickets start at. And I was like, wait, they're selling tickets. It's probably one of those museum of ice cream things where it's just this. And I see that a lot even in the gaming industry, in that I will get these invites to whatever PAX or E3 party or things that I don't go to. I'm not saying I don't go to parties. I go to some, you know, but like I don't go to the ones that are like, oh, this publisher is putting on this party and it's like, we're going to be filled with like Insta ready. You know, we're going to have all sorts of things for your Instagram. It's just like, I have been at some before where it's just like, hey, here's this booth where it's like, we've got these cosplayers and it looks like you're on the set or whatever. Like there's a difference between, I don't know, like a photo op. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, you walk around like an E3 show floor and there's just a million like big robots and oh, there's the Batmobile or the Ghostbusters car or whatever. And, you know, I've done it before where it's like the early days of E3. It's like, oh, cool, look, it's me in front of the Batmobile. But just the whole idea of marketing that, of like, oh, this is for all these Insta opportunities. Oh, this is going to be great for your brand. It feels so much more gross to me.
It is gross from our perspective, but these people that buy into that, like, they're people that their social media identity is everything to them. There are people like that in the world. I mean, it's so common. I've met plenty. You know people. I know people. It's really sad that their lives are passing them by for a photo they'll be able to look back on. And you're supposed to, when you look at photos, like that should bring back memories of what happened when you were there. It shouldn't just be the photo in a vacuum with a hashtag and however many likes it got.
It's interesting though, because I think you and I feel pretty similarly about social media in that it has some applications, it has some uses, you know, it's like I use it and, you know, it's a great promotional thing and good things can come out of it. Mm-hmm. But overall, I think we really don't like the really statusy, like this Instagram obsession stuff now. Mm. But there is a good side to it all. Like the bad side is just all this like obsession about, you know, showing off how much of your life is this great party or whatever. But then also the good part is something like this Fyre Festival here, it was completely exposed thanks to social media. Mm-hmm. I think without people posting those pictures of their shitty cheese sandwich or the tents or whatever, at most this is like a little tiny article in a newspaper or
but
on
CNN. But no, I think if there wasn't social media, this wouldn't have happened.
That's
anyway.
True. That
the
is
whole,
true.
That was the whole selling point.
That's true.
Influencers wouldn't exist.
The chicken or the egg thing. Like this whole idea doesn't come about.
Yeah, it wouldn't have happened. I mean, if they were going to put on something like this and there wasn't any social media, it would be marketed as a music festival that would be a lot more modest in its offering, that would be about the music, you know?
That's true. But, you know, like, social media has been effective in, you know, maybe the Fyre Festival is a very weird case because it is so predicated on social media obsession. Mm-hmm. But social media can actually enact some major change and things like that and shine a light on things that have not. You know, we just watched a lot of the R. Kelly documentary. Mm-hmm. And a lot of that, you started seeing that kind of groundswell support of people being like, hey, fuck R. Kelly.
Right.
Which led to this documentary, which led to investigations, which, you know, like, good things can come out of that.
Yeah,
for sure.
Yeah. No, I mean, I don't know how much the documentary was made because of social media. I think the documentary was very effective. I don't necessarily think, you know, people saying stuff, because people have been saying stuff about R. Kelly forever.
Right, but like, you know, the whole like mute R. Kelly, not to go into a whole R. Kelly thing, but like, you know, the whole mute R. Kelly thing and everything, like, I think you started hearing a lot more about this stuff in recent years because of that.
Well, to be honest, Dan, I mean, I knew about like fairly recently, a year ago or so, that there was stuff coming out in the news about this sex cult, right?
Right, yeah. You started seeing it. There were a couple big articles that came out about
that. Yeah. And I didn't know about this Mute R. Kelly stuff until – and maybe, you know, you're probably right. It's probably just because I don't, like, see – like, follow a lot of trending hashtags or whatever that I never saw the Mute R. Kelly thing. But I did see these articles appearing But it's, that's another thing. That's another question. But yeah, it definitely has its positive aspects. It changes the tide because it gives everyone a voice.
Yeah.
But I think here's the one thing I will say that's positive, and the fact that it can make you more empathetic towards people because you learn about other people's experiences because
right.
you know it's so easy to share. But I think it does a lot more harm than good because of the things that you couldn't have necessarily anticipated, like all these social implications and stuff.
Yeah, I do think it's a net negative.
Totally.
And I really think there is something extremely sad about, you know, I feel bad for the people. Like, I'm sure plenty of people bought tickets to this fire festival mm-hmm. thing because they wanted to go party on a beach and mm-hmm. see some musicians they mm-hmm. liked. And, like, they got fucked. They got fucked real bad.
Yeah.
But the sad part is the ones that are very much like, oh, this is going to be good for my brand.
Totally.
And, like, I know people mm-hmm. that will, like, do things specifically not because they want to go to it, but they will outright say, like, oh, yeah, I should go to that. That's going to be good for my brand.
Right.
That's going to be some good Insta opportunities or whatever. It's like, what are you fucking like? This is your priority?
Totally.
Go experience your goddamn life.
Yeah, like, it's so beyond our comprehension or our understanding. But it's what you said is true. I mean, we really can't say, like, these people are dumb because they just have different values and priorities. And none of these people, they're not evil people. The only person that's evil is the guy, the figurehead at the top of all of this.
Billy is the villain for sure of this story.
Yeah, totally.
Yeah.
Totally.
So yeah, nothing wrong with the folks that went necessarily.
I mean we can poke fun at that.
Yeah, there was kind of a, you know, social media definitely had some fun being like, oh, all these rich kids getting mm-hmm. scammed mm-hmm. out of this thing for Instagram Island or whatever. Like, oh God, Instagram Island is probably like a year away from being a reality show, isn't it?
Well, is it that Temptation Island show?
Oh, that's more just like, let's get these people to cheat on each other.
That's true. That's true.
I can't think of a thing. You would have to pay me a good amount of money to attend that. Because, like, first of all, the idea of a music festival is a nightmare to me. Mm-hmm. I would never want to go to a music festival. Like, I know you really like concerts.
Yes.
But, like, you know, an individual concert is one thing. Hey, this band you like in town.
Yeah.
You go, you're there for a few hours, you go home. The idea of, like, and first of all, I don't even like concerts from bands I like. I just don't like going to concerts. So the idea of, like, whenever I hear about, like, Coachella or the Gathering of the Juggalos
yeah.
or any of this shit, I just think, like, you would have to pay me thousands of dollars to attend one of these things.
I agree.
To be uncomfortable
completely.
And around all these people, and I'm not going to like any of the music. And
yeah. Like, I've been to a handful of festivals, not, like, several day-long festivals, but just, like Gigantor, for instance.
The
which
Megadeth
like
one?
It's a day-long festival, and I went because, obviously, I really like Megadeth, and Opeth was playing. And, you know, it was, I'm glad I went, but it's another one of those things. It's like, Opeth, their songs are like 10 minutes long, so they're probably going to play 3 songs.
Yeah.
And then it's like, okay, then I have to wait around, like, through these bands that I didn't really care about.
Yeah.
For Megadeth. But, yeah, it's, festivals aren't at all appealing. I think a lot of people like it, again, less for the music and more for the camaraderie around it.
I guess, yeah.
But it's, you know, overpriced drinks. It's just waiting online for a terrible bathroom.
Yeah.
Yeah. I will say, though, to respond to your comment about not liking concerts, I think you're in a unique position because so much of the music that you enjoy is
yeah.
like older,
yes.
Older bands that have been around, been established, have, you know, really massive followings. You would never have the opportunity to see a group like that in like a hole in the wall bar, like just
right.
I think when you have a really intimate experience with a band, and it's like it's very rare where you see a band that you really like and you're familiar with their songs and it's in like a hole in the wall place. Like, I really like Mutoid Man, and I went to that show mm-hmm. a few weeks ago at St. Vitus. And for anyone outside of New York City or anyone that's not been to St. Vitus, it's like a hole in the wall bar. It's like a tiny room with a bar attached. It's so cool. And these kind of big metal acts will play there. And it's so cool to be right there in a small room with these guys that you've listened to all their music and you know all their songs, but they're right there performing for you. It's and you're around this crowd that, like, you know they're loving it too. It's a really unique experience that I think, unfortunately, you probably haven't had the opportunity
no.
to experience because of the fact that, you know, you're not necessarily into that kind of music or whatever, but I will get you, I will take you to a concert and we will have fun at some point.
I've had fun at concerts. It's not always miserable, but it's like, you know, as far as my favorite bands, my two favorite bands are probably Lynyrd Skynyrd and the Rolling Stones.
Right.
And Lynyrd Skynyrd to me has been dead since 1977,
right.
literally and figuratively.
And Rolling Stones, you're going to see them in a stadium.
I saw them at Arrowhead Stadium and hey, it was really cool, mm-hmm. but like even, you know, Bob Dylan was one of my favorites ever mm-hmm. and I got to see him twice and that was more of a like, and it was kind of a smaller venue. he doesn't play stadiums, you know? And I was like, wow, that's Bob Dylan. I'm seeing Bob, like one of the greatest legends in music history. But it's more just to say like, oh, I saw Dylan while he was alive, and less like, I'm really liking him mumbling through this version of like a Rolling Stone.
Yeah,
you know?
No, and that's not to say that like most of the time when I go to a show, I'll enjoy the first few songs and it'll be like, all right, when are we getting out of here? Because a lot of the times it isn't a comfortable experience.
Yeah.
Sometimes the sound quality just fucking sucks. You know, it could be a lot of things, but occasionally you'll have a really awesome time.
I'll say I did really like that Megadeth concert you took me to.
That was fun, but there was that guy that was standing behind me and groping me.
That's fucking right.
Right. You remember that?
Yeah, yeah.
And
yes.
I like looked at him and I looked at you and I don't think you knew what was going on.
I didn't realize that was happening.
And then when I looked back at him, like gave him a look, he was like had his eyes closed. Like, I don't, so people listening, Dan, whenever he says something weird that he can't really follow up, he just pretends to be sleeping. Like, not trying to be believably sleeping, but he'll just, like, suddenly snore.
Because I don't know how to get out of something.
Yeah, so it's something Dan does. But this guy was, like, doing that, but for real. Like, he was really trying to, like,
do that was his way. He just disappears. It's
yeah, so he was, like, feeling me up, and then I looked around, and his eyes were shut. It was like,
That's...
I'm just going to give him the benefit of the doubt and say maybe he was under the influence.
I don't think you need to give that guy the benefit of the doubt for anything. Fuck that guy.
Yeah, but that was cool. Remember when for some reason, my favorite song from that set was Dawn Patrol, even though that's like more of an interlude and not really a song.
Yeah.
I like it.
I like Holy Wars a lot.
That's a really good song.
Yeah.
Did they play Rust in Peace?
They played a couple tracks from Rust in Peace.
But did they play the song Rust in Peace?
I don't think so. And they didn't do Train of Consequences, I remember, because I want to hear that.
It's a really good song.
But it was still a really good concert.
You know the Train of Consequences that you listen to on your phone? The studio version
it's
was
different.
Recorded in one take.
Oh, really? With the Spotify one?
Yeah, well, just the album version. I don't know which.
Oh, really?
They have the remaster or whatever. But
yeah, because like, the music video one and the one on Spotify are different.
Sometimes there are like radio or video edits of songs.
Okay.
But it's fucking insane. That song was recorded in one take. I mean, Dave Mustaine has – he doesn't have a technically good voice, but he has a good voice. I mean, it's perfect for the music. Very snarly. It's perfect for the music. And you have to have a fair amount of like endurance to be able to sing the way he sings in one take while playing guitar like he plays guitar. I mean, it's just bonkers.
Yeah.
And, you know, not to discount Marty Friedman. Marty Friedman does a lot of heavy lifting with the guitar stuff, obviously. He's a fucking genius. But Megadeth is a really good band.
I agree.
If you don't listen to Megadeth, you should listen to Megadeth because Rest in Peace is, like, one of the best albums of all time.
I agree. I think it's a great one.
But newer Megadeth isn't that great, and I understand that Dave Mustaine is a douchebag, but he was, at some point, a genius. So there you go.
Yeah, I think they're quite good. speaking of concerts and stuff, like the people in the Fire Festival, I think I've heard of Major Lazer because our friend Brian has a Major Lazer shirt.
I was thinking the same thing.
Yeah.
That's
so,
all I know him
for. I don't know what kind of music it is. I have heard of Blink-182. Well, no, I know what Blink-182 is.
Yeah.
I'm not a fan, but like I know what they are at least. But outside of that...
You know what they are.
Yes. Yeah, they're souls. But every other musician named in this documentary, I did not know anyone playing at this festival whatsoever. And it's funny because like we are of the ages, you more so, that like are supposed to be like, oh, hip to today's music or whatever. And I don't think either of us give a shit about, like, the average. Like, we watch SNL every week, and, like, every musical guest is like, what the fuck is this?
I don't know.
Yep. I don't think we're missing much. Not to say, you know, hey, if you like that music, you like that music. But for us, it's just like, we don't.
Well, here's my experience with contemporary music, contemporary pop music. So, I work at in a WeWork. The company that I work for is in a WeWork, which is awesome. I love WeWork. And when I'm in the bathroom doing bathroom stuff,
I'm sorry, what?
So the bathrooms in the WeWork, let me just say, are fucking fantastic. Whoops. Because the doors go all the way down to the floor. It's like your own private little room.
Ooh, that sounds nice.
It's really nice.
Yeah.
But you hear the music that they're playing. And I will say that while some of it is absolutely atrocious, and I don't like any of it, like I wouldn't want to listen to any of it, I can appreciate that a lot of the lyrics aren't about just like dancing and shit. A lot of the music is actually has some depth and artistic merit. Not that I'm like the be all end all to judge artistic merit, just from my perspective, because I like weird music. But so you know, I'm not completely throwing a wet blanket on pop music I like what you like, but I think people are getting smarter every generation, and their music is kind of reflecting that a little bit.
I mean, there's always been dumb pop music.
I mean, it's being reflected in pop music. Like, other genres of music have always been incredible. But I think pop music is, like, a reflection of the zeitgeist in some ways. You know what I mean?
I always see wrestling as my reflection of the zeitgeist.
Well, that is, too. I think it is, too. Absolutely. I think... you can completely make that argument.
Stone Cold Steve Austin was an icon of the edgy late 90s.
he's very cool.
Yes.
And somehow I think he still holds up in terms of, like, if I saw Stone Cold, like, late 90s era Stone Cold on a contemporary Raw broadcast, I'd be like, that guy's fucking badass.
Last night I watched the WrestleMania 13 match against Bret Hart and the WrestleMania 17 match against The Rock, and Austin's still really cool. You know, so many other wrestlers don't age that well in many ways, I guess. Uh-huh. But man, Austin stuff is timeless.
He is, and his, I don't know if anyone listening listens to his podcast.
It's good.
It's just called Stone Cold Unleashed or whatever.
The Steve Austin podcast or the Steve Austin show.
I don't know
if he's still, I haven't heard in a while. He used to do the Unleashed, Uncensored one and the other one.
But he is just a delight to listen to as well. I mean, the way this guy talks, and he just makes the most, like, the minutiae of everyday life just so interesting, like the stuff that happens to him, which kind of just happens to all of us, but the way he tells the stories are so good.
He has this amazing quality that feels very genuine, that, like, I've met him several times, and, like, there have been times where I've, like, straight up been interviewing him on camera, and he's always been very good at that, but then there have been times where it's, like, I've just been at some press party thing or whatever and talked to him for a while, and, like, he knows there's no cameras, he knows it's not getting published anywhere, he doesn't know who the fuck I am, but he was, like, asking all these questions, oh, you're from Kansas City? Oh, yeah, we used to go down there, and we'd go through there, we'd hang out in Harley Race's basement, and we'd shoot pool, and, like, his wife would yell at us to keep it down, and we just barbecue, and, like, but he seemed very, he would, like, ask what, like, oh, you're a Chiefs fan, you know, like, it wasn't like the, like, oh, hey, yeah, here's your photo op, and then get away from me. It was like he seemed to just really enjoy talking to me, even though he doesn't know me or care about me at all.
Yeah, and his character is just, like, I said, it just still holds up, because I guess it wasn't tacky at the time, it wasn't too extreme, it was kind of realistic to an extent, obviously.
I mean, to the point where it's like, if you're mad at your boss, you're filling his Corvette with cement and getting a limo with monster truck wheels.
Well, I'm not saying his actions were reasonable. Right. I mean, this is a guy that fucking stone cold stuns an old Linda McMahon. Like, this, you know, his actions shouldn't be admired, but I'm just talking about the character.
Right. Yeah. Yeah.
At the end of the day, it is wrestling. I mean.
Yes. Yes. All right. I liked this documentary.
It was really good documentary.
Yes, I really enjoyed it. We did not see the Hulu one. I read a few things before this to decide which one we should watch. Mm-hmm. And it didn't seem like there was a clear, like, oh, this one's trash and this one's good. So if you can't get enough Fyre Festival stuff, maybe check out the Hulu one too. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I guess the big one with that is that they get to interview Billy McFarland. But I also just don't trust anything that guy says, right. So I wonder how much could come out of that.
I'm sure it was he just said a lot of nothing. But you know what my concern is, Dan? Watching this, I think there's going to be some people out there that watch this and realize how easy it is to scam, you know, people out of their money, and maybe we'll concoct similar schemes to get money out of people, you know?
I think the people that have that weird part, you know, that sociopathic quality, like Billy McFarland, I think they're going to do that whether they mean to or not. I don't think it's like, I've got an idea, I'm going to be a sociopath and lie to everyone.
Yeah, like, it's just like, how do I get money? Okay, I do this. All right, let's just get from A to B, whatever that entails.
I know how to use people, I know how to do this, so let's use it to my benefit, and yeah, totally.
I'm so glad that it's so, I could see that and be like, that's just wrong. And obviously you could do the same. It's like a test to confirm whether or not you have psychopathic tendencies.
Oh, I am all for people using ingenuity and ideas and leveraging things to get rich or come up with a product or you know, make good money for themselves. Mm-hmm. Like, I really have a ton of respect for that. Mm-hmm. But there are lines. And when you were just straight up lying to people and selling, you know, false goods and just being a shitbag to people and not paying people and, like, no, do it legit. You know, yeah, go for it. Get the American dream. Get rich.
And
but
lying,
like, do it
can
right.
only get you so far. I mean,
it can get you pretty far.
Let me just say real quick, I've been using sociopath and psychopath interchangeably. I know some people think there's a strict definition for both. From what I've consumed, they're kind of mean the same thing.
Oh, yeah?
So just putting that out there if anyone's, like, tearing their hair out wanting to send us a correction email or something.
Okay. All right. Well, that'll be it for this week, I think. Do you have any suggestions or anything for folks?
Yes.
What's that?
So, speaking of music, I've been listening to a lot of, like, 80s synth, but, like, dark kind of stuff. And as you know, Dan, I think I talked to you about my that band Dead Can Dance is one of my favorite bands. Lisa Gerrard is an amazing singer. There's this band called This Mortal Coil, which was less a band and more a collective of a bunch of, like, kind of new agey artists from the 80s. And they have this album called It'll End in Tears. It's fucking awesome. I've been listening to it so much. It's so cool. It's really dark and kind of bleak, but beautiful also. And it's all that in an 80s. It has that like 80s sound that people try to imitate nowadays, but can't.
Yeah, yeah.
It's very genuine, and I strongly recommend it. I know it's on Spotify. That's how I've been listening to it. So, yeah, cool. Recommending an album this week.
Cool. I'll recommend a book. I'm trying to read more lately. That seems like that'd be a smart thing to do.
Yes, and you have been reading quite a bit lately.
I have been. And so I found this little under-the-radar book that I think you must have just randomly found somewhere because I don't think anyone's heard of it, but it's In Cold Blood.
Very underground.
By Truman Capote. I'll say the thing is I don't know anything about books at all, mm-hmm. but that's one of the books I've always heard about. And so I have a feeling it's probably a very famous and well-respected book, and I'm not telling any.
I mean, he's an amazing author. What was surprising to me is not that you didn't read it. Like, normally I wouldn't be surprised that someone didn't read a book because books are a big time sink. But this is a book that's crime is set in Kansas. So I thought you would be all over it.
Well, the thing is, I had always heard that it was set in Kansas, but it was set in western Kansas. Mm-hmm. And that is such a far cry from, like, I've never been west of Topeka, you know, and, like, I barely spent time there. So, like, I was Kansas City and Lawrence, which are both on the far, far right side of the state.
Right.
And so it is straight up farmland. Like, so I seriously have only been on, like, the 5% eastern part of Kansas. I didn't spend any time out west. So when I heard, oh, this is out by Garden City or whatever, I don't really have any connection with that. But then when I started reading it, there are tons of parts that are like set in Olathe, which is where I went. You know, I went to Olathe East High School. Mm-hmm, you know, it was I looked up like the diner that the two criminals were eating in, and it's like, oh man, that's right by the courthouse in downtown Olathe. Like, it's so yes,
it's pretty neat, right?
Yeah, and I think it's fascinating, and I'm recommending it only being like probably less than a quarter into it, but just the way it's written and everything. I've never read any Truman Capote or anything, but it's been very, very good.
It's a very, very good book.
Yes,
I can also recommend that wholeheartedly.
Yes. Also, we can recommend if you would like to, if you like the podcast, you can join our listener support program. It is something you can do if you're enjoying the show and you want to help keep the lights on and throw a couple bucks our way. You can help out at $1, $5, or $10 a month. If you go to panningthestream.com and you click support this podcast, or you can just do it once and cancel it. It's all pretty easy
to do. Give us a schmacka.
Yeah, yeah.
Just one schmacka.
We have a very modest following here on Panning the Stream, but that said, we still do have a handful of followers that we appreciate very much, and we appreciate every week whenever we get a new one with a little bonku. So,
bonku. The few, the strong, the Panning the Stream listener supporters.
Yes, and Bonka, I believe we have a bonku for a new supporter this week.
That's right, Daniel. So this bonku is for a gentleman named Christopher L. Christopher L., I want to say thank you. I hope this haiku, or bonku if you prefer, will suffice. I thought about it for a really long time, thought about you, what you represent to me, and through that deep contemplation, I have come to this haiku. Are you ready for it, Dan?
I am personally ready for it. I hope Chris is.
All right, Chris. Here it goes. Christopher, you're it. The guy we were waiting for. A quality bro.
That's a really good one.
Thanks.
I like that. I hope Chris liked it.
Chris, I hope you can get that knitted on a shirt or something. I don't
I
know.
I mean, yeah, there's you can go to websites.
I'm sure you could just do like Redbubble or whatever that is.
Yeah, or Cafe Press or whatever, yeah.
Cafe so, Express or Cafe? Cafe Press.
There's probably a site called Cafe Express.
There's probably a cafe called Cafe Express.
Probably.
Yeah.
But also, if you want to get a hold of us or give us suggestions or anything like that, you can go ahead and follow us at Pan the Stream on Twitter. You can email us at panningthestream@gmail.com. Any suggestions, feedback, anything like that. I also want to say to folks, if you're enjoying the Terrace House stuff, there are plans in place for the rest of Boys and Girls in the City.
We plan out our podcasts, unlike Billy McFarlane and his festivals.
Yeah, we have a roadmap. Actually, no, this documentary came out like yesterday, so we just kind of hot-shotted this one in here, so we don't necessarily have that much. I mean, yes, we do. And we definitely know that there will be more Terrace House to come, and we will wrapping up Boys and Girls in the City and all of the drama and potential meat crimes and things in the future. So, thank you, everyone. If you can go to iTunes and give us the old 5-star review, if you're liking the show, that's always appreciated. But thanks so much to everyone at home and to Bonk.
Thank you, guys. Thanks for listening.
Yeah, thanks for sitting across the table for me, Bonk. Razor, thanks for being quiet for most of that time.
Thanks
that
to my mom and dad for making me.
Yes, thanks for that. And they're listening. So, hello.
Love you guys.
Hello, in-laws. How are you? I can't hear them. We're recording this. They're going to hear it tomorrow. So, that'll be it, I guess.
All right.
Hey, fuck Billy McFarland.
I love you, Dan.
I love you. Wow. We ended now. We just talked about loving each other. All right, bye, folks.
Bye.